through the letter of James. Remember that? James, talking about faith on trial. Testing our faith to see where we are in our relationship with God. Chapter 1, James focuses on the struggles and difficulties that we go through in life, encouraging us in the midst of those trials to choose to seek God, to allow Him to shape us into who He has created us to be. And in chapters 2 and 3, he focused on what faith looks like in action. James gave us a series of teachings with examples to compare our lives to see what do our actions tell us about our faith, our relationship with God. Coming to chapter 4, James has been focusing on what happens when we mess up, when we fail at trusting God. And two Sundays ago, we looked at quarrels and conflicts because our faith, the quarrels and conflicts that we get into because our faith, our trust, is focused on ourselves and not God. Remember that? Yeah, good. So today, starting at chapter 4, verse 13, James is focusing on our use of time, or how our use of time can really mess up, our faith, our trust in God. People who keep track of these things estimate that in the average lifetime, the average American, that's us, I guess, we average 3 years in business meetings, 13 years watching television. We spend $89,281 on food. We consume 354 pounds of food. We make 1,811 trips to McDonald's. More, I suppose, if you're going to Starbucks. We spend $6,881 in vending machines. We eat 35,138 cookies, 1,483 pounds of candy, more if you go to Awana. We catch 304 colds. We're involved in 6 motor vehicle accidents, which I thought is really cool because I don't have to worry about accidents anymore. That's cool. We're hospitalized 10 times. And we spend 24 years sleeping, not all of which are doing sermons, right? Would you agree with this? Time is valuable. Do you agree with that? It's even more valuable than oil. Never seem to have enough time. And that's where James is going this morning. The time that we do have, how should we use it? How do we use our time so that our faith in God doesn't suffer? It actually grows. It deepens. Because that's what we want, isn't it? Right? A deepening faith, a deepening relationship with God. Verse 13, come now, which is James' way of saying, pay attention. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. James is writing to Jews that are spread out throughout the entire Roman Empire. And for those Jews, business travel was common. Just like today, these businessmen, they went from city to city, they were buying and selling stuff, and they had places of business in these different cities. So it's not hard to imagine that a group of Jewish businessmen would sit down together one day and they would lay out these plans, think about plans of expanding their business into another city. Now notice two things with me. All right, first, notice what is included in their plans. What is included in their plans? First off, there's a start time. They said, stay or tomorrow. And secondly, there's a place, such and such a city, which in James's writing is generic. He's making a generalization. But in the actual businessman's plans, it would have been a specific city. Tomorrow, we are going to South Dos Palos. Okay? And third, there's a definite time frame. We're going to spend a year there. Fourth, the particulars of the plan. Okay, again, James is generic. They would have been specific. Tomorrow, we're going to South Dos Palos to open a Starbucks. Okay, that could be a stretch, but hang there. Fifth, there's a purpose. Okay, we're going to make money. All right, point being that these are well thought out, specific, detailed plans. Second, notice what's not included in their plans. What's not included in their plans? God. See? There's no mention of God anywhere here. Grab this. Planning is not the problem. God is not against planning. Leaving God out of the planning is the problem. And thinking about the way business is conducted today, less and less, if at all, God is not a part of business today. Would you agree with that? The priority is self, my life, my business. I do what pleases me. What pleases me is the bottom line. It's what I get. What James is writing about, we see it happening around us every single day. Verse 14. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes it away. Look with me. Two truths that these businessmen have failed to consider. Two truths the businessmen have failed to consider. First, their ignorance of the future. Say that with me. Their ignorance of the future. In 1926, Lee DeForest, you know who this man is? Lee DeForest? He was the inventor of the cathode ray tube. Okay, and he said this, quote, "Theoretically, television may be feasible, but I consider it an impossibility, a development which we should waste little time dreaming about." 1943, Thomas J. Watson, chairman of the board of IBM, said this, quote, "I think there is a world market for about 5 computers." Okay. The most accurate thing that can be said about those who predict the future is they are not accurate. Bottom line, they don't know. None of us has a clue about what will happen tomorrow, let alone 1 year from today. And these businessmen, they are totally ignorant about the future. Second thing the businessmen, they fail to consider is this. Their impotence concerning the future. Say that with me. Their impotence concerning the future. Ultimately, they're powerless to control the future. There were two frogs that were talking. And one frog was predicting the future of the other frog. He said, "You're going to meet a beautiful young woman. And from the moment that she sets eyes on you, she will have an insatiable desire to know everything there is to know about you. She will be compelled to get close to you. You will fascinate her." And the second frog got really excited about all that. And he said, well, where am I? Where do we meet? And the first frog said, "Biology class." James writes that they were like a vapor, right? We're literally, we're like the dew, the morning dew that's on the grass. On our way up to Sacramento yesterday in the morning, there was tule frogs. They were just hopping around. There was tule frogs. We got past Stockton on the way up to Sacramento. And Fred and I were having this discussion about how tule fog gets formed, right? Warm ground, cold air, and there's this dew point in between someplace, right? Moisture drawn from the earth. And James is talking about morning dew. So when the sun comes up, that's a force beyond its control, the dew, it evaporates. Vapor. And there's nothing that the dew can do about it. Okay? No amount of liposuction or Botox is going to add 1 microsecond to our lives. When our time is up, it's up. And the clock is ticking. These businessmen, they are making plans about the future like they own the future. And the bottom line is that tomorrow is uncertain. And none of us knows if we will be around when it happens. Verse 15. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. This last week I had one of those God moments where the light bulb goes on, and I suddenly got hit in the face with God at work. You ever have one of those? It was like God hit me over the head with a 2x4 to get my attention. And in this case, it was about His sovereignty over time. In the way that I prepare sermons, choosing which passage to teach on, I try to get off someplace way in advance to get along with God and prayerfully to look at passages, look through passages, seeking to understand where God would have us as a congregation look into His Word. And following that process, today's text and topic was decided on back in the spring. Okay, ponder that. On any other Sunday, this passage, what we're looking at today, would be interesting. It would be helpful. It would be a good teaching to consider. But with all that's gone on this past week, trying to come to grips with Bill and Lena's murder, the suddenness of their deaths, our ignorance of the future, the vapor which is our lives, today's text is powerfully relevant, bringing us face to face with God's sovereignty in a way that we must pay attention to. God exists outside of time. He has no beginning or end of or succession of events in His own being. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? Time is God's. He created it. He uses it according to His purposes. He's not surprised by events in time that may surprise us. And when we look at how the events within the time of our lives, how those events unfold, and they may seem random or senseless or kind of lurching along into an uncertain future, we need to be reminded that time and the events within time, they progress according to God's will. God knew before we knew the events even of this last week, and He knew which of us would be here today, and He knew that we needed to hear this message to remind us this morning of His sovereignty. Verse 15, if the Lord wills, Lord willing. You ever say that? The phrase is not just some sort of catchphrase like, good luck. If the Lord wills, it's an attitude of the heart. It's a realization of sovereignty. If the Lord wills, we live. Say that with me. If the Lord wills, we live. And that truth needs to get into our hearts and needs to rattle around and needs to shape the very core of who we are and how we look at our lives, how we view the time of our lives. We cannot assume anything about the future, even the next moment of our life. We cannot plan our future unless our plans follow His plan. Unless we first acknowledge that God is sovereign over the time of our life. Verse 16. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Walter Cronkite. Remember Walter Cronkite? Remember him? Yeah. Tells about a time when he and his wife were sailing down the Mystic River in Connecticut. And he describes how they were navigating through the river's tricky, dangerous turns through this expanse of shallow water. And there was a boatload of young people that they sped past, and they shouted, waving their arms, and Walter waved back a cheery greeting. And his wife said, do you know what they were shouting? And he said, well, they were saying, hello, Walter, you know. And they said, no, they were saying, shallow water, shallow water. Arrogance is being caught up in our own self-importance. Who we think we are, letting our ego run wild. Heard a great definition of ego yesterday at Promise Keepers. Okay? Ego is the anesthesia which deadens the pain of stupidity. Isn't that great? Boasting in our future plans is arrogance. It's letting our egos run wild, being impressed with our own knowledge and our own cleverness. James writes, when we boast in our future plans, it's evil, it's wicked. It shows that we've messed up. We've stumbled in our faith. Something has gone terribly wrong in our relationship with God. Verse 17. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. It's hard for us to think about how we use time as being arrogant. Well, I'm not an arrogant person. Hard for us to think of our use of time as sinful, but that's what James writes. If God, who is sovereign over the time of our lives, and we know that, if God isn't at the core of how we use time, then we're living in sin. Thinking about how we can use time so that our faith doesn't suffer, so we actually grow closer, we go deeper in our following after God. Looking at what James writes, there are two points of application that I'd like for us to focus on. First, time is not a birthright. Say that together. Time is not a birthright. Time is a gift of God. C.S. Lewis, writing in the Screwtape Letters. Screwtape, a high-ranking demon, is giving advice to Wormwood, his, his novice demon nephew who's in charge of working towards the damnation of this young human man. And Screwtape is giving his nephew Wormwood advice on how he can really mess up the faith of this young man. He writes this, "You must therefore zealously guard in his mind the curious assumption, my time is my own. Let him have the feeling that he starts each day as the lawful possessor of 24 hours. Let him feel as a grievous tax that portion of his property which he has to make over to his employers, and as a generous donation that further portion which he allows to his religious duties. But what he must never be permitted to doubt is that the total from which all these deductions have been made was, in some mysterious sense, his own personal birthright. When we view time as our birthright, we begin to think that all those interruptions to our plans, someone showing up unexpectedly, the driver who's going slow in front of us, the phone call in the middle of the game, the two nicely dressed young men who show up at our door, people who never stop talking, we've got places to go and people to see and things to do, we start thinking that all that is an imposition on our time. When we view time as a birthright, as our birthright, we start thinking that we have a right to use time as we see fit. We're accountable only to ourselves for how we use time. God gives us the privilege and the time to meet Him here for worship. But we feel that we have a right to be someplace else. God gives us the privilege and the time to meet together as siblings in Jesus, to meet together for prayer and for Bible study, but we have other priorities. God calls us to witness for Him, go into all the world. See, that's proactive, it's direct. It requires commitment and dedication, not go when you feel like it and do what you think is best and pray that somehow there'll be an opportunity that might open up for you to witness to someone as your life goes along. Go witness! And we allow other things to organize our time. When we view time as a birthright, we start thinking that we have earned the right to our own recreation and leisure. The great American dream. Retire. Buy a Winnebago. Drive all over the place. Stopping at every Starbucks along the way, right? Playing golf. Spending the kids' inheritance. You can come up with your own retirement plans, all right? But hear this. We aren't retired from using time as God requires us to use time until God says that our time is up. We are supposed to keep serving God until God says stop. You ever watch a kid build a sandcastle? I love building sandcastles, especially with the kids. We went out to Pacifica this last summer. The wind was blowing sand all over the place, okay? It was like being rubbed with sandpaper. It was torturous. The water was almost as cold as the pool up at family camp. But we started making sandcastles. I love doing that with them. You know, they're buckets that can be filled up with sand. You turn them over and they become turrets and towers and feathers and sticks become flags and moats get dug. Walls get carved smooth. Spent all day doing that. Making something out of nothing but little grains of sand. And imagine our world as adults, making something out of nothing. Answering phones, keeping up with emails, tapping our schedules into those little organizers, commitments and obligations, running from place to place, never really catching up, hoping you don't forget the kids someplace, not that anyone's ever done that, building our carefully constructed little worlds, monuments to our achievements, our life's work. But according to James, it all gets washed away. Maybe sooner than we think. So what do we achieve? How do we use our time? Child will watch the water, the tide come in and wash away product of hours of work and enjoy the sunset. Pick up his shovel, bucket, take his father's hand and go home. No regrets, no sorrow, no fear, no surprise. It's the way it is. We fear the tide. The waves of years that come to collapse our little castles. Maybe we need to learn from our children. Maybe we need to view time differently. God owns the sand. God controls the waves. Time is not a birthright. Our time is His. Second thought of application. While time isn't a birthright, time is a gift of God. Say that together. Time is a gift of God. Time, it's a well thought out gift that God purposefully gives to each one of us to be used according to His purposes. You remember the movie Dead Poets Society? Robin Williams portraying John Keating? And he quotes these Latin words, right? Carpe diem, which means what? Seize the day, right? It was a way of energizing his students, right? Rise up, right? Grab hold of life. About 100 years ago, Christians signed letters with the postscript DV. Wesley, for example, he would sign his name, and then underneath it he would put those capital letters, DV. DV stands for the Latin words Deo Volente, which means God willing. Carpe diem is arrogant. Deo volente, carpe diem, God willing, seize the day, puts us under God's sovereignty. Elizabeth Elliot, she writes about two adventurers. They stopped by to see her, and they were loaded with all kinds of equipment for the rainforest east of the Andes. They were off. And they didn't ask her for any advice, just a few phrases to converse with the Indians they would encounter. And she writes, quote, "Sometimes we come to God as the two adventurers came to me, confident and we think well-informed and well-equipped. But has it occurred to us that with all our accumulation of stuff, something is missing? Way too often we have this backwards. We put the cart before the what? The horse. We make plans and we envision the days of our lives. We even get down the road a bit and think that it's too hard now to change course. We plan and we pray, God bless our plans. We're going to such and such city. But what's missing? God. Kent Hughes describes this this way, quote, "So pervasive is our culture's arrogant independence of God that many, even many most Christians, attend church, marry, choose their vocations, have children, buy and sell homes, and numbly ride the currents of culture without substantial reference to the will of God." Genesis 1:1 to Revelation 22:21. The Bible is a description of how God is using time, His plan, His purpose, His will. And the theme is very simple. God's redemption of mankind. And that theme should rearrange our use of time. Reorganize our priorities. It's a starting point for us to ask the question, how do the priorities of my life, how I'm using this gift of God, how does my life fit within God's use of time? And the way to answer that question begins with an acknowledgement of truth. I am not sovereign, God is. Try that together. I am not sovereign, God is. We need to lay aside the arrogance of faith and our own knowledge and cleverness, our own priorities and planning, and our own vision of our future. And second, answering the question, how does my life fit into God's use of time? Second, it's a daily, minute-by-minute, if not second-by-second process of discovery, submission, and faithful dependence on God. A life in which everything that we do is first taken to God in prayer, where all that we do is evaluated by His Word, in which from the core of our being, our passionate desire is to seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, the accomplishment of His will in us and through us. For us to lay our lives before the sovereign God of time so that if any vision is given, if any direction is given to our lives, it must be coming from Him. That's the life that goes deeper with God. Faith that's learning to follow after Him, to trust Him in all things. Tomorrow is a day away. But what if tomorrow never comes? How will you live today? Will you have used the time that God has given you wisely? Let's bow together in prayer. It doesn't matter so much to God as to how long we live. It matters how we live. God has given you His gift of time with purpose. Are you willing to give Him sovereignty over your minutes, the days of your life? With your heads bowed, just you and God, if you want to say this out loud, following me, or in your heart, following me. Follow me in this prayer of commitment. God, the time of my life is yours. Take me into your future, wherever that may be, whenever you desire to use me, in whatever you require of me for your purposes. Amen.